Simon Byrne, our new Chief Constable in Northern Ireland, taking your calls this morning. George, morning, George.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Chief Constable.
Good morning. I thought it was another George then, but here we go.
My question would be, I'd like to make a point just quickly before my question, that the point I'm going to talk about is drugs, and in my opinion, as an ardent drug campaigner, there is no loyalist or there is no Republican drug dealers. They're crane gangs and should be treated as crane gangs and should be dealt with by the police's crane gangs, because that's all they are. But I think your force and yourself would go a long way to getting the support of my community and communities right across Northern Ireland if you've moved to a policy of no bail for death dealers. When you catch them, and I see you are, and I know you're doing, you'll see my tweets tell you on a weekly basis, read drugs, but I know you are chasing them down. I know you are catching drug dealers. I know you're seizing drugs, but...
Well, George, it's not up to the police whether someone gets bail or not. That's up to a court, isn't it?
But Stephen, with respect, and the Chief Constable will know this, in the court, the police could be pushing for the no bail, because they feel that they're going to be, you know, they could be just straight back on the streets and dealing within hours.
So what's your question to Simon Byrne?
Could he push, and could the force push more forcefully for no bail whatsoever for death dealers?
Well, thank you, George. I mean, I agree with you, firstly, in terms of the issue about crime gangs and that people that peddle in drugs, it doesn't really matter what sort of identity they come from. They're peddling evil on our streets that cause death on our streets, and we need to do more about it. In terms of the specifics, we don't, like some of the other things I talked about earlier, frankly, we don't have the power to issue sort of blanket policy saying to officers you will always oppose bail for drug dealers, much as you might like us to do that. We have to look at the individual circumstances of the case and the individual and make that application to the courts, because as Stephen said, it's actually, once somebody's been charged and gone through that initial remand, bail after the remand is the court's decision and not the PSNI's.
How much of a drug network is there in Northern Ireland compared to elsewhere where you've been in the UK?
I think there's large similarities. We have somewhere in the region of 90 organised crime groups that we would assess are involved in one way or another within Northern Ireland in peddling drugs and importing drugs into Northern Ireland to distribute across communities.
90 organised crime groups?
Yeah.
And how big are some of those groups? Because we sometimes think in Northern Ireland of, you know, just the paramilitaries and the big name paramilitaries, so to speak.
Well, sometimes the two overlap, as George says. They vary in size. Some come and go. They sort of mobilise and sort of disappear. Some are more sophisticated. Some have links right back into other parts of the UK, or indeed the Republic, or indeed Europe, so that we work with other agencies, such as the National Crime Agency, right across the UK to try and track where, in the relation to this question, where drugs come from. I think it's a huge issue for some communities in Northern Ireland, and not just what you'd see as illegal drugs in terms of heroin and cocaine, but also illegal prescription drugs that, well, what I can see at the moment, are behind many of the deaths that's reported too often across communities.
So are there major, you mentioned Europe there, are there major foreign crime groups orchestrating and set up in Northern Ireland to peddle drugs?
There are a number of nationalities that peddle drugs across Northern Ireland, whether, I wouldn't describe them as major European crime groups. You've got some issue there of sort of some mafioso type sort of network. We don't see evidence of that, but you can imagine that obviously we're an island, therefore if you're going to have drugs in this country, they've either got to be made and produced here. For example, you know, you can grow cannabis, and we raid homes regularly across Northern Ireland to attack the cannabis growers. But the sort of thing I'm talking about is people that would import drugs that come from other parts of the world, and the hub for that is usually through the northwest of England and into Northern Ireland.
And what's the quantum, what's the scale of the problem like here?
I think the scale, broadly to me, from a policing perspective, is similar to policing the problem in many of the urban areas that I've done in the past, such as Liverpool and Manchester. I think there's a broader question, though, around the whole society's response to this. Policing is only a part of this. We can enforce the law, we can educate, we can divert drug users and dealers, in fact, into programmes to try and address their behaviour. But I think it's one of the big questions for society when we get beyond the day-to-day sort of challenge that you've done today, Stephen, around Brexit and the past, that dealing with drug dependency is a big issue for Northern Ireland, I think.
And when I mentioned paramilitaries, back to paramilitaries again, you very quickly said the two can overlap in terms of drugs. So is it the dissidence or the UVF, or which paramilitary group is peddling drugs, or both?
I think it's both. At the end of the day, drugs or the peddling drugs give you certain leverage. One is about power, because you can force other people to deal lower down the food chain on your behalf. And crucially, this is about finance and money. So part of my response is to make sure that the PSNI is doing all we can, not just to put people behind bars, but to use civil powers to track people's assets and look at where we can do them financial harm as well as criminal justice harm.
And where there are drugs, there will be people at the very top of that controlling it, because that's how it works. Mm. So these drugs lords, if you like, in Northern Ireland, you know, we haven't seen a high-profile case where you've taken one of them down. You've taken one of them out.
Well, at the end
will
of the
day, will that be a test for you in your first year?
Well, I'd like to think that if I come back in a year's time after my first 100 race team, I can talk about a range of things that will be different to now, because at the end of the day, anyone coming into a new job with fresh eyes, you see things that you can do differently. I think, frankly, overall, the policing of by the PSNI is strong. It's regularly assessed as good by the main inspectorate that looks at these things right across the UK. So I think listeners can have reassurance in that space. But I think it's about looking at our whole investigative response. Sometimes unpicking the Mr. Biggs takes time, because they legitimise themselves cleverly to distance themselves between what happens on the streets of Belfast and their own wealth and activities, so that we have to be cunning and patient to sometimes take these people out and not just address the low-hanging fruit. And I think it's the challenge I've heard more than once, that we're just going for easy pickings, and I think it's about both.
Yeah, because some people in Northern Ireland, yeah, they will know exactly who the main people are who control and extort, who the people are at the top of the chain.
Indeed.
You know that, and you probably know the names as much as some of the rest of us do.
Yeah, but
and they walk about, and they waltz about this country.
Yeah, and before we ask, I'm not going to start naming them on here, much as you might like me to, but I think at the end of the day, it's about working within the law, because we have to abide by the rule of law to get evidence that's admissible in the court to bring these people down. At the end of the day, if people have information about Mr. Biggs, who indeed just street-level dealers that are peddling crime in their communities, tell your local neighbourhood officers or ring Crime Stoppers.
Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Brian.
Morning, Chief Constable.
Hello.
The word has come up so many times in the programme today, the word paramilitary. Paramilitary means sometimes people wearing uniforms and the protection of the people and so forth, protection of the areas. Could the PSNI and the media not gradually phase out this word paramilitary and call it what it is? As gangsterism, I know Stephen does use the word gangsterism, but the word paramilitary, it puts these people on a pedestal. Strangers coming in, tourists coming in, they see these murals, paramilitaries, and I think these people go around with uniforms and so-called protectors of the areas, and we all know what they're involved in, so why not just call it as it is, gangsterism, and get rid of the word paramilitaries?
Well, thanks, Brian. That's a good point. I think broadly, I agree with you. They are gangsters. How we use language, well, maybe we need to think about that. But in terms of my appeal to listeners is the fact that they can be reassured in terms of the PSNI. We are redoubling our efforts to be seen in communities, taking on these people that exert power and influence. There is no place in a civil society for any organisation, whatever you tell them, that think it's legitimate to carry out shootings and punishment beatings, supposedly on the behalf of citizens, to keep them safe.
You say that, Chief Constable, and yet we see, as a community, that when these gangsters put their flags up, that, like, I could write the script now for what the police will say back to us. It's part of an multi-agency approach, and it's not your job to take them down. Mm. If they go in and they create illegality by putting people's effigies up on a bonfire, it's not the police's. I could write that script. You will basically say you don't own the land.
Well,
you're not taking these people on head on in some of the optical things that we see on a yearly basis, where it goes round and round in circles, and they have the power. Mm. When paramilitaries put illegal flags up on lampposts, you lot do nothing about it.
Well, again, that's a really fair challenge. And I think I've said more than once since I've started here that we're the shock absorbers for a whole range of problems. And equally, we're heroes and villains, because one minute we go up a flagpole and we're seen as doing the right thing. And then we take a flag down and we're seen as doing the wrong thing.
Which is about only, leadership. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, only yesterday I had a meeting with people that have seen a whole raft of experience in relation to this in the past. And about it's about understanding again that we have to work within the law. We have to remember that other agencies have their own powers and responsibilities, and that we don't want to get drawn into things that aren't policing purpose, because we have a precious number of officers that I want to put into doing day-to-day issues and not going up ladders to take flags down. That said, it's about important to recognise that in certain situations, in certain places, images could be offensive, or they could be something that breaks the law. If they're offensive, that's about working with the communities, have them taken down, or with another agency that's got more powers than we have. If they break the law, that's about seeing it properly as a hate incident or a hate crime and using our powers to seize evidence and prosecute people. And we have done that.
But that's a bit of a cop-out to expect anybody from any other agency who isn't trained to protect themselves, who doesn't have a gun, who is not a police officer, to be climbing up a lamppost to take a flag down. Nobody else is going to do it without your protection.
Well, I think at the end of the day, people take images down across Northern Ireland on a regular basis, from what I'm told. At the end of the day, in certain circumstances, if another agency needs our support to carry out taking down an image that's illegal, really offensive, we will help them do that. But at the end of the day, if we keep getting drawn into this, I don't want my police officers on a cherry picker or a ladder taking down a flag just because it's something that's the responsibility of someone else. We have to work with a range of partners to tackle a range of problems in Northern Ireland and play to our strengths. And going up a ladder isn't one of ours.
Brian was talking there about the importance of terminology and maybe not calling these people paramilitaries anymore. And he wants us to call them gangsters and terms like that. Do you recognise that there was a war in Northern Ireland and the paramilitaries were soldiers, or do you think they were gangsters?
Well, I think in the past that's really about commentators, about how they saw themselves. It's about identity and
how
ideology.
How did you see them? For example, those people that saw themselves as paramilitaries and were trying to kill your officers in the past, in the PSNI and in the RUC, were they soldiers?
I think they were criminals.
Fighting in a war?
I think they were criminals, because at the end of the day, anybody that's trying to kill not just my officers but people from different communities, be it Protestant communities or Catholic communities, they're breaking the law and they're criminals and need to face justice wherever you come from.
Ian's next in Belfast. Morning, Ian.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Simon.
Hello.
Welcome to the madhouse.
It's not that bad. I'm going quite easy on him this morning, I think.
What?
I think I'm going quite easy on him this morning, Ian.
Oh, you are, but with the eye, I get there. Simon, I'd just like to ask a simple question, really. If I walked out into the street with a mask on and a gun and started firing shots, what would happen? I would say I would be arrested. But if I get 50 people and I have a mask and some of them are masked and I go out and fire shots into the air, nothing happens. What would be the reason for that?
Well, I think what you're probably talking about there is the policing of funerals, if I think...
Correct. It's exactly what he's talking about. And the volley of shots that we see at funerals.
Yeah. Where you're going there, Ian, I think what you have to remember here that, frankly, because of the demographics, that we're going to see a lot more funerals of people that would associate themselves with organisations that in the past were pursuing terrorist violence. And again, like many things here, we've got to deal with things on a case-by-case basis. You might find it bizarre, yes, that people can go into the backyard of a house and fire what appears to be a firearm with bullets into the air, and that is reprehensible. At the end of the day, we will carry out, where we've got intelligence, evidence gathering, because often you wouldn't expect me to put armed officers into a house where people may have been drinking, where it's packed with women and children, and cause a sort of conflict where there's actually more harm than actually the act that's started all of this because someone's got a firearm. We have to deal with the sensitivity and carefully.
It has actually happened in the street. I mean, I've seen it myself, and your officers have been in the background watching it. As I say, if that was me, they would move in and lift. I'm certain why that's the law. But the law works for one, it should work for 50. You know what I mean? The same law should have not made his rights or a political sort of policing where maybe it'll offend a certain section of the community and sort of put a bit of the Good Friday Agreement keeps coming up. Maybe a scare to annoy people because of the Good Friday Agreement, where really you should be just carrying out your duty. And,
Absolutely, I agree with it. We have to carry our duty impartially, but also we have to do it sensibly and proportionally. And if we're going to cause large-scale disorder, or, for example, end up in a situation where shots are fired between two parties where people are injured or killed, we've got to take that into account, because we have to operate within a whole range of processes that enables individual officers either to draw their own firearms or us to deploy officers to address okay. people with firearms. We carry out operations to gather evidence, sometimes more slowly than you might realise, and to bring people to the courts where there's evidence there that they've discharged a firearm.
I don't want the whole hour to be about paramilitaries, but there's one more question about it. Ian in McLaughlin. Morning to you, Ian.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Simon.
Good morning. Hello, Ian. You're a community worker, Ian. Go ahead.
Yes. A simple question, Stephen. The Northern Ireland Policing Board helped formulate our policing plans in the country, and those plans are then rolled out by the various PCSP forums across the province. How does the Chief Constable feel about convicted terrorists being involved in both the policing board and various PCSP functions?
Well, I think it's just about recognising that my job is to be held to account by the policing board. They're my employers. And I think the issue about anybody's past is a matter for them and not for me.
But could you understand the sentiment with many people that who fear that confidence in policing is being eroded because people who have a terrorist conviction are in fact helping you formulate your policing plans?
Well, it's hardly the Chief Constable's fault, Ian. That's what has been set up in Northern Ireland to provide stability and provide confidence in policing. You're talking about the likes of Gerry Kelly here, to spit it out, aren't you, from Sinn Féin?
Basically,
do you want Sinn Féin to support policing or not?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody should support policing, but they should support policing as a natural right. The point I make is that various other peace processes throughout the world, when people with a terrorist conviction have been involved in the structures after peace has been established, there was always a renunciation of their past violent act and an absolute total commitment to taking things forward using lawful and peaceful means only. That hasn't happened in Northern Ireland, and I think it's missing from our current processes.
Okay, Ian, thank you. Of course, Sinn Féin would say they're totally committed to peaceful means. Can I move away from paramilitaries and ask about other things? Because no matter what you will step into, Chief Constable in Northern Ireland, such is the nature of the job here, there very well may be controversy around it. I noticed that the police were present at the Gay Pride event in Belfast City Centre. The BBC got itself caught up in a huge controversy around that recently too. There will be some people saying that because at these Gay Pride events there are political messages within that event, for example, that same-sex marriage should be legal in Northern Ireland, and there's the police marching or present at an event which has a political message. How are you doing that? How are you aligning yourself with a political message in Northern Ireland? The message this year was rights now.
Well, firstly, to take... Thanks. I mean, that's, a good question. I think, firstly, to take it back, yes, we did participate in Pride in Belfast a few weeks ago. From all the feedback I got, it was seen from a wide variety of people to see a good thing to do. We would anticipate that next year we will participate in Pride again, because it's, whilst some people will say it has a political purpose, I think our view is it's more about respecting the identity of communities right across Northern Ireland. We police with the support of a whole range of communities, and if we're to do a good job, we need to have the confidence of the gay and lesbian community as well to help us do that. So I don't think it's about being shy in taking part in a parade, which is, to me, a celebration of identity, not politics, and also to demonstrate that we will tackle hate crime, which affects this community, in a different way to other parts of Northern Ireland.
But the organisers of the Gay Pride event in Belfast said that one of the headline purposes, this was in their literature, was a rights now agenda, and for same-sex marriage to be legalised in Northern Ireland. Mm. For those people who want to have confidence in you that you're impartial, and they feel that marriage is between a man and a woman, and for the biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland, the DUP, who are against gay marriage, how are you marching and taking a role in a political event?
because I think it, to some people, he has a political connotation. To me and other people that I work with, when we've looked at this issue, and we discussed it only last week at one of our key meetings where we're trying to look at how we put a footprint around a range of issues like this across Northern Ireland, I think it's a good thing to do in terms of supporting people from a range of different backgrounds that feel vulnerable and isolated. And this is about identity and respecting that, not about politics.
So will you march in an Orange Order event?
I doubt it.
Will you march in an Irish language event?
Well, again, you're trying to confuse two things here, because we're doing it from a point of view of representing communities and giving them the confidence to see that no person has the expectation that when they go about their daily lives in Northern Ireland, they're going to be victimised simply because of their sexual orientation.
But there are two arguments about same-sex marriage.
There are two arguments.
Do you support same-sex marriage?
I'm not going to go into sort of politics as a police officer.
But
that's
in
not...
your force being there, you're getting involved in the politics. If you're at that march, you're aligning yourself with same-sex marriage.
I don't think necessarily we are, because I think what we're aligning ourselves with is about tolerance. It's about seeing that everyone is equal in the eyes of the law and their expectations to be protected by the PSNI so that they're victims of crime. I think it's about building relationships with the LGBT community and seeing this is about celebrating people's identity, not the politics.
03030805555 is the number this morning. The text 81771. Don't think I've ever spoken to a chief constable in this studio without asking about speeding and speeding offences. What are your officers doing, still hiding behind hedges, still hiding behind corners, when the guidelines say that you're supposed to stand out in a very visual way because it's supposed to be a deterrent?
Well, I've not got personal experience of people hiding in hedges and behind corners.
Chief Constable says the same thing.
Well, my first week, I went out with roads policing officers on patrol and saw them firsthand carrying out speeding enforcement just outside Belfast. We were pretty visible in yellow jackets and very clear what we were doing. I think speeding is one of the key contributors to casualties and road safety in Northern Ireland. It's an issue we take seriously. We're just looking at the moment. Can we invest more in more modern technology to help us deal with that part of driving behaviour? There are many people that will experience the benefits of the awareness course that we run on to challenge behaviour that can frankly lead to someone being killed.
But it's about fairness, isn't it?
It is.
So will you, if the public were to provide you with evidence of your officers hiding,
yes,
would you discipline them?
I think we have to look at the circumstances about what they're doing, because equally experience tells you that photographs don't always tell you the full story.
But so if it were the case that an officer was hiding with a speed gun, would you discipline them?
I think discipline is an issue that has a variety of connotations. I think if people have got photographs of doing something like that, send them into the PSNI and we'll have a look at them and to see if their behaviour was justified in the circumstances. As you quite rightly say...
How could it be justified?
Well, I don't know what the photo would have been, again, in the mantis of speculation.
You know the sentiment of the question.
Yes, I do.
I'm putting it to you that your officers hide with speed guns.
And I'm putting it to you that I've got no evidence of that.
But if the evidence was provided, would you discipline them?
But it would depend on the circumstance. If it's on the bounds of ridiculous just to catch people, discipline is a pretty draconian phrase, isn't it? It might be if it's justified in terms of what they've done is frankly stupid. It's about words of advice, is it not, rather than discipline. If it's a pattern of behaviour that goes on weeks and weeks just to boost a tally of speeding motorists, that might be something else that would fall into the misconduct regime.
And already coming into the Nolan Show, I can tell you, there are calls of some of your officers who are out doing it right now.
I think the important thing to do is to actually say, I encourage people to drive responsibly, but I also encourage my officers to enforce the law. I've been out firsthand to see how they do it. I think there's issues about how we improve the use of technology so that we can get people either into the court system or into awareness courses quicker, because I think most people you speak to in any conversation across Northern Ireland or indeed anywhere else I've worked will admit from time to time they speed themselves, but they recognise it's dangerous and we should do all we can to stop that.
Do you think, because I'm aware we've only got a few minutes left, do you think we could get into a place, do you think we're anywhere close to a place in Northern Ireland? I sometimes think, I broadcast across the water as well in Manchester for Five Live, and I sometimes think that Northern Ireland could now be seen as being safer than some other areas in the UK, because you've got significant knife crime in other areas of the UK, and in terms of a terrorist threat, I was on air when the London Bridge attack happened. Do you think we're even close to being able to get rid of armed police in Northern Ireland?
I don't think we're close to do that. I think because at the end of the day, because the underlying terrorist threat is still severe and it's dynamic, you couldn't sort of ring fence certain parts of Northern Ireland and say you can police here in an unarmed stance, a bit like you see many people in Manchester. I think there's sometimes, we're looking at the moment, are the different types of equipment, more use of tasers, for example, across Northern Ireland, so we don't force our officers to draw their firearm in a circumstance where in other parts of the UK they wouldn't need to.
Would your officers routinely have tasers? Would that be the aim?
I think I would be, I need a conversation with the policing board, and we've begun that conversation because at the end of the day they're the sort of accountability body. I'd be keen to see more tasers rolled out across Northern Ireland.
All officers have them?
Not all officers, because frankly they carry enough kit as it is. I don't think it's routinely practical given our unique circumstances here, but I'd like to see more availability. I don't want to go into too many specifics, but I was speaking to some officers only the other week personally that dealt with a very difficult circumstance where they had to confront a man with a firearm. They were very close to drawing their weapon and discharging it and probably killing him because they didn't have any other alternative apart from talking to him. The taser would have given them that dynamic ability to do something else.
David's in Belfast. Morning, David. Hello, David.
How you doing, T. Corporal? How you doing? Please?
Hello, David.
Very quickly for me, David.
T. Corporal, I'm an old member of the public. We've seen a lot of chief corporals come and go in Northern Ireland. You've talked about your 100-day goal. What are you going to achieve? What's realistic within them 100 days to give me confidence in you?
Well, sorry, I just lost the sound there. I mean, first, in terms of 100 days, it's gone. So if you're asking about the next 100 days, I'm working with the police board at the moment to see about increasing the number of police officers to 7,500. Whether I achieve that by Christmas, we'll have to see, because it's about not just political support, but convincing the civil service, who are the guardians of public money, that case has been made. But that's my key priority in the next few months.
OK, so you've only one priority, really, within the next 100 days. Nothing else would convince me that you're the right man for the job.
Well, in fairness, David, I mean, it was the police board.
Have you any targets? Have you set yourself any targets that we can hold you to account on?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, Steve.
OK, well, some of the things we're looking at the moment is, in terms of targets, is firstly to develop a new plan with the policing board, because that sets the direction out for the next 5 years. We've got a meeting tomorrow to sort of hopefully sign that off. Underneath my priorities at the moment, I've been very clear about this, is increasing officer numbers, improving the estate of the PSNI, because we have officers working right across the country in buildings that are falling to bits around their ears. That's not acceptable. And improving the use of technology. Will you see a difference within 3 months? Not in the respect of those things, because they're key longer term aims. Within the PSNI, as you might expect, with fresh eyes, you're able to review and challenge a range of things, building on the legacy and the hard work of my predecessor, Sir George Hamilton. But in terms of 1, 2, 3s and targets, I don't think you're going to see them in 3 months, because my experience is that being a chief constable is a marathon, not a sprint. And just to rush off with a whole series of announcements without evidence, I think it'd be unwise.
We're at the end now. What do you do for your downtime? I'm trying to understand what type of person you are.
What are your hobbies? A variety of things, really. I enjoy ice hockey, so it's good to be near the home of the Belfast Giants, so I've been able to see them in my downtime. And probably, you know, it'll go down two ways with listeners, but one of my big passions is about steam trains. So I've been out to Whitehead and I've been to the Ulster Transport Museum to try and understand about Irish railways, and that's something I'd like to learn more about in the next few months.
Sir George Hamilton was a man of faith. Mm. Are you?
I don't think it's really the point today to go into anything about my sort of faith or my family background. I've come as the Chief Constable of Simon Byrne, and I don't really want to get drawn on faith, because, again, it'll be winners and losers.
OK. So you like steam trains and the Belfast Giants?
They're two key bits in my life.
What's your favourite TV show?
To be honest with you, I don't watch a lot of television. The thing I've enjoyed most recently was Stavlet's Flats on Channel 4, so it's not a BBC programme. I thought it was really funny, so that was the time I have to switch on the news or the television, if I'm honest, is limited at the moment.
And Theresa May got herself into trouble. Last question. What did she do? The most daring thing she's ever done? Running through the fields of wheat?
Fields of wheat.
What's the most daring thing that you've ever done?
Oof, that's a good question. I suppose one that springs to mind was cheating in the cross-country race at school and getting caught the first time I did it.
So you cheated? How did you cheat?
I cut about 500 metres off the route. And then I got found out. So maybe that was what I realised the difference between right and wrong was.
Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For coming into the Nolan Show, and hopefully you'll be back. And just to let the public know that you offered and wanted to talk to them on calls this morning, and I'm deeply grateful for that, as I'm sure they are. What's your final message to the public this morning?
Well, firstly, it's to reiterate, I think, a couple of bits. Firstly, you know, you pushed quite rightly on the provisional RA. It's to re-emphasise that I've got no information that suggests any change to what George said in 2015. Secondly, to the public, it's thank
you
for...
Well, when he said in 2015 they were active, they still existed.
I've got no information that's changed that assessment, so that I've got no information that suggests at the moment that they're active. But equally, in terms of the broader message, is that I'm no regrets about taking the job. A thank you to people for ringing in today, but also for making me feel so welcome right across Northern Ireland when I've been out on the beat.
Hopefully you'll be back.
In 100 days.
Thank you very much indeed, Chief Constable.